Welcome to Profiles. I'm Moya Andrews, and today we have the opportunity to meet someone who plays an important part in our community. He's Mark Moore, President and CEO of Bloomington Hospital. This year, Bloomington Hospital celebrates 100 years of providing high-quality health care to this region. Mark, welcome to Profiles.
Thank you, Moya. I'm so pleased to be here with you.
Can you tell us about the scope of services that Bloomington Hospital provides?
Bloomington Hospital and healthcare system is truly a regional referral center and has built that scope of service and reputation over 100 years. We act as a regional referral center for at least a 10-county region in south-central Indiana. Close to 400,000 people depend upon us for services, all the way up to tertiary care services, and that's a term used in healthcare to indicate services that are secondary, such as open heart surgery and cancer treatment, et cetera. Almost half of our business comes from outside of Monroe County, which is interesting because many people think about Bloomington Hospital serving Bloomington, which we obviously do. But with half of our business coming from outside of Monroe County, you can see the dependency that the outlying counties have on us.
Yes, indeed.
Another major statistic is that our emergency department sees over 50,000 visits a year. And that places us probably fourth or fifth busiest emergency department in the state of Indiana. So we really run the gamut from prevention and wellness in the community and in the schools through acute care through our hospitals. And I say hospitals because some people might not realize we have a second hospital down in Paoli, Indiana, south of us. It's a small critical access hospital, which is a designation by the federal government that relates to medically underserved areas. But it does a wonderful job of giving primary care to that community and then referring more acute cases up to Bloomington Hospital. We also have three long-term care facilities, one in Bloomington, Bloomington Hospitality House, one in Bedford, Bedford Hospitality House, and one out at McCormick's Creek, the residents in McCormick's Creek. So we're also into long-term care. And then finally, we have home care and hospice for end-of-life issues and for care in the home setting. And I've left out a whole lot of other things that are there because we truly have a major responsibility for this community and we take it seriously.
Well, we're very fortunate in this region to have that range of services. It's a very complex network. How about your role as CEO? How do you manage to keep track of all of these different enterprises?
Well, first of all, I love my role. It is truly fascinating. It's varied every day as a new challenge and new excitement. And we're structured in a way that gives a lot of our leadership the freedom and the empowerment to do what they need to meet the needs of the people they serve, but in a way that also takes advantage of the synergies we have so that we have a number of areas that support the caregivers throughout our organization, but also standardize where there's value added so that the things we do in Bloomington can benefit the things we do in Paoli or in the outpatient setting, and we deliver care in probably some 40-odd locations beyond just the two hospitals when you consider all the different outpatient services we render. So my role is coach, mentor, coordinator, often the representative or the face of Bloomington Hospital, and it's exciting.
Well, it certainly takes a lot of talent and a lot of experience, I'm sure, to keep all of those balls in the air and to do it so well. We are fortunate, I think, here that for the last 100 years that we've had the quality of care that we've enjoyed. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the hospital?
It is very exciting to be in our centennial year. 100 years ago, in the community of Bloomington, there was a fatal accident around the railroad tracks. A young man didn't survive as a result of being hit by a train. And it mobilized some of the local civic organizations, principally the local council of women, to say, we need an acute care hospital, a provider of hospital care in this community. And they organized and opened up Bloomington Hospital in a red brick building on the current site of Bloomington Hospital at 2nd Street and Rogers Avenue. That hospital then, in that small red brick home, then proceeded to another major expansion of the hospital. And I think in that first expansion, it increased up to around 35 beds. And then the red brick home became the home for nurses in nurse training, interestingly enough. And then subsequent to that, over the years, we've had yet another major expansion, which is now the administrative building at the corner of First and Rogers. In fact, my office is in that administrative building, and it used to be obstetrics on the administrative floor. So often someone will say to me, I was born in your hospital back in such and such. And I've said, yes, you probably were born in my office. Then proceeding up to the 90s then with yet another 80s and 90s major expansion. It seems like every decade we've had a major expansion that has led up to the hospital now being around 355 inpatient beds. At that site and full service in every stretch imaginable.
That's certainly impressive. Now, how did you end up in this particular position? Can you tell us a little bit about your career path?
Absolutely. I was greatly influenced by my parents, as most people are, where my parents, both father and mother, were very active business people, but also in an adjunct of health care. Ultimately, maybe I should back up. My father initially was a minister in South Central Indiana, and so I think that probably grounded me well in the values of the Midwest culture and faith. And then they subsequently went into long-term care leadership in managing a series of nursing homes. And so as I was going through high school and ultimately into an undergraduate degree at Butler, I knew that I wanted to be in the business aspect because that intrigued me, but I wanted to have a flip side to that, which is something altruistic where you really felt like you were contributing to a community. And what better area than healthcare, where it blends business and mission in terms of giving back and the health status of a community. So with an undergraduate degree in business from Butler, I then investigated a career path in healthcare really requires a master's degree. And in that era, there was only one master's degree in healthcare administration in the state of Indiana. Actually, that still exists in the state, and that was at Indiana University. At that point in time, it was part of the School of Medicine. So I achieved that master's degree at the Med Center in Annapolis. And then part of that also was a 12-month administrative residency. You often think about doctors taking their residencies. Well, there's a component, a parallel component for executives in healthcare.
And that's interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, an internship or in this case, a 12-month residency, which was wonderful for me because I didn't have any real experience in hospitals at that point in time. But I was fortunate enough to secure a 12-month residency at community hospitals in Indianapolis and proceeded to move through the ranks. Every time I got a little itchy in terms of the need to have a new challenge or a promotion, I managed to be able to secure that within the system at community as it grew from one hospital to four in the Indianapolis area. One of the most notable things I was able to do was to be the first chief executive officer of Community Hospital North, which is in the fast-growing Fishers-Castleton area right off of 465 and I-69. And that facility, over the course of time, has grown to be the nucleus of that system because of the fast-growing population growth there. And started off as a 225-bed hospital, and they're adding, I think, at least another 100 beds, and they build a heart hospital and all kinds of things on that campus. So my career proceeded and progressed to be the chief operating officer for that four-hospital system over all the delivery and of care in that system. And then the wonderful opportunity here at Bloomington came about 3 years ago, a little more than 3 years ago, obviously, as they were searching for a chief executive officer. And it was a new challenge for me. I was ready for a new challenge and managed to interview and everything clicked in terms of what a wonderful opportunity, great assets, great people, great quality of life in Bloomington, and me ready for the next point of my career and next challenge to be a chief executive officer.
Well, it seems to me that we were fortunate that the match was so perfect and that you're here to help celebrate the centennial of the Bloomington Hospital. Let's take a break here. What music have you selected from your collection of favorites?
I'm a lover of music, and I love musicals. And as many people worldwide, I'm in those legions of folks who love Les Miserables. We're going to play one of the many selections, and there's so many beautiful songs in that musical, but do you hear the people sing? It always gets my juices flowing.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men? It is the music of a people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a life about to start when tomorrow comes. Will you join in our crusade? Who will be strong and stand with me? Beyond the barricade, is there a world you long to see?
Then join in the fight that will give you the right to be free.
Well, that certainly was a good selection, Mark. What other interests do you pursue in your free time to balance the demands of your work?
Well, the demands are pretty significant, as you might imagine. And fortunately, like I said earlier on, I love it. So many times I suppose the work becomes my hobby, becomes my life. But outside of that, my wife, Carol, and I, we really enjoy the outdoors. And you would relate to this in the sense that she loves to garden with her flowers and the outdoor areas around our home. We also, whenever we travel, like to be out of doors and have gotten more and more into hiking, which I'm planning ahead for national parks and some additional areas we can go and experience the outdoors and hike. I like to try to stay fit, so part of that is in my hobby. And then a lot of reading, too. And I like to get away from the work-related reading, which is always there, and actually get into novels and some things like that and some nonfiction.
Well, it sounds like a very balanced life, and it would be crucial, I'm sure, when one thinks about the complexities of the job and also the number of people that report to you, that you have some balance in your life. I was wondering if you could talk to me a little bit about what you and your senior leadership and the board of the hospital have planned this year to celebrate the centennial.
Moya, it really has been a great year. Well, first of all, we organized a number of our very loyal and strong volunteers around helping us plan the centennial. And there have been a number of different things that we've done. One of those was starting off back in February with a Founders Day celebration that really recognized all of those original founding groups, and representatives from those groups were able to come and get recognition. And then we had different representatives from the governing aspect of our community to also people representing the foundation and those other groups that all got a chance to speak. And both reminisce as well as give grateful acknowledgement to 100 years of service. We had an interesting thing, too, where we had probably a half a dozen of our nurses that were wearing the uniforms of nursing throughout the years. And so that was kind of stylish and really interesting. And we've had different displays in our main lobby of different medical devices and era through these 100 years. One of the underpinnings of this whole year has been a medical lecture series also. And we've just had outstanding folks, nationally recognized speakers, such as the CEO John Seffrin from the American Cancer Society, or a futurist named Dr. Leland Kaiser, who really advocated us to think outside of our paradigm about ways that we could better meet community needs. And in fact, this evening, Dr. Debbie Frein, who used to be dean of faculty at IU, is in town to talk about medical economics. So you see, we've had a continuation throughout this whole year, and we want to keep that going, by the way, too, because it's so stimulating to have folks, and it's not too hard to get people to travel to Bloomington. They get excited about coming here.
That's true. And what I like about it, being an Indiana University person, is that there has been a lot of collaboration between the university and the hospital. And I'm glad to see that you're planning for a continuation of the lecture series, and also that there is a continuing growth in the relationship between IU and the hospital, because after all, IU is the largest employer in the area, and you're the second largest.
Absolutely. We recently put down on paper all the different interfaces and relationships that we have with Indiana University, which we started when you were in the dean of faculty position, and it continues to grow. So the synergy of the two organizations working together for the benefit of this community is outstanding.
And it's been a wonderful experience for the university to have the receptiveness on the part of the hospital since you've been at the helm. Let's think a little bit, too, about some of the challenges nationally in healthcare. I know that things that happen in this community often reflect national trends, and I wonder if you could give us a little thumbnail sketch of what you see the challenges are nationally and how they're reflected in this community.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest challenges that's playing out nationally is, and so many of our social service agencies and not-for-profits are being challenged around reimbursement, funding sources to continue to do the things you want to do in terms of programming and technology and the access to capital, et cetera. That plays out in our community with Bloomington Hospital in the sense that we truly act as a safety net, being the largest institution between Indianapolis and Louisville for this whole South Central region, as we talked about earlier. When people don't have the means to be able to pay, the uninsured or the underinsured, they still need their health care, and we are there for them in a variety of different ways. Certainly emergency services and acute care services, but also we run an indigent care clinic called the Community Health Access Program, our CHAP clinic. All of these things, including the ambulance service, by the way, I should mention the ambulance service. In many urban areas, the city or the county will run an ambulance service and fund it. In our community, by history, Bloomington Hospital runs that. And I think we do a superb job. And when you measure the response time, when you measure the caliber of the paramedic units and the training of our people, and the quality of our ambulance vehicles, et cetera, they're just top-notch. So this community benefits from that. But the subsidy of that runs anywhere from $600,000 to $800,000 a year.
That's a significant amount.
It's a significant amount, and it comes back to all of us indirectly or directly through your health insurance rates and the cost of health care. So one of the concerns most definitely is the funding sources and Medicaid reimbursement and even Medicare reimbursement that don't fully pay the cost of health care. And that difference gets cost shifted over to the private insurance. And the concern is more and more of the private insurance rates are balking at the coverage of the shortfall from the federal side. So the squeeze on reimbursement is ever present and potentially going to be worse for the future. That has engendered a lot of debate about the care of the underinsured versus the insured and whether there's actually two stratas of care, because the underinsured or uninsured often will not get the prevention and the wellness and the other things that can help combat disease or stop it in its tracks, you know, with proper care. So that whole arena of adequate insurance reimbursement for our community is going to continue to be a challenge for the future. Second major area is the shortage of healthcare personnel. It's not one that often gets a lot of highlight, but it is very present. And let me give you an example. The average age of a nurse in the acute care setting 20 years ago was probably in the mid-30s. The average age today is, I think, around 47 or 48. And as individuals of both genders obviously have looked at career paths, but particularly females, there's a lot more options for people in the last 20 years for folks to take, and that has decreased the enrollment around our nursing programs throughout the nation. In the same vein, we have a demand for more nurses than ever before in hospital settings and other settings that they can go work in. And the acute care setting is a hard job. It's a challenging job, very rewarding, but it's hard with 24/7 operations and demands on one. So the issue of keeping an adequate supply of highly trained professionals is a real challenge for healthcare, whether it be in nursing or the other professional technical positions. We have a great environment here, though, and actually have one-upmanship on many urban areas in the sense that we have Indiana University and Ivy Tech as two higher education institutions that help us interface and keep that flow of well-trained folks headed our way.
So you don't have to give bonuses and all kinds of incentives to get a supply of nursing employees?
Not to the same degree that perhaps large urban areas that are in dire need have.
I see.
On the other hand, we always have the responsibility and the pressure to be market competitive in terms of wage and salary, and particularly with a large urban area like Indianapolis. So the whole arena of manpower is another major challenge for hospitals and healthcare. A third major area that is playing out nationally is the issue of for-profit facilities, particularly those where there are provider-owned interests such as physicians, and the competition that is giving the community-based not-for-profit hospitals across the country.
So Bloomington Hospital, as a not-for-profit organization, would be impacted by for-profit institutions.
Yes. I mean, we're a microcosm of what's happening nationally again. And let me just describe that for a second a little bit, because not-for-profit does not mean you don't try to make a profit.
Yes.
It simply means that, number one, you have a mission of service and charitable care, and second of all, whatever surplus of revenues over expenses that you have, 100% go back into your institution. So in essence, your stockholders are your patients and your families and your community.
So everyone benefits.
Right. I mean, you have to remain healthy financially, though. No question. I mean, so not-for-profit doesn't mean that you run a deficit. You have to have a surplus in order to stay healthy. It's just that, again, those dollars go back in the community versus a for-profit model of healthcare, particularly around specialty hospitals, where individuals are the ones that profit from the excess that comes into those facilities. So as freestanding for-profit specialty hospitals have been created across the country, particularly around major categories such as cardiovascular care or oncology or orthopedics, the concern is that they have found their niche to take commercially insured patients that help with the subsidy of those who can't afford to pay in community hospitals, and basically the term is skim the cream, leaving the community-based institution still with the mission but less of the margin.
I understand. Now, so that a for-profit institution would therefore put a not-for-profit institution at some risk because there would be more of the insured patients going to get their services at a specialty hospital, and then you at the not-for-profit institution would have fewer insured patients, but you'd still have a large number of uninsured and indigent patients.
Correct. There's not too many, by their very nature, for-profit specialty hospitals that run full-service emergency departments, that run indigent care clinics, that do prevention and wellness. In other words, do all the things that don't pay but yet are still vitally needed in this community. By their very nature, they will target the pain segment and the patients who generate procedures and revenues. And I'm not necessarily blaming the for-profit mentality. The United States and capitalism has been birthed on that. It's just that in healthcare, that our market does not work like a retail market. Tell me another market where A second party orders the service, i.e. the physician. A third party pays for the service, an insurance company, determines whether they'll pay or not. And then layer onto that the not-for-profit mission where we render the service without payment on the front end. It's not a retail market.
That's a very different market.
It's a very distorted market in that sense. So we try to act like a business, but we have the mission as an underlying part of that. In fact, an often used phrase is no margin, no mission. You know, so there's the business aspect, but the mission part of it. So again, nationally, there's some concern that relates to increasingly these types of facilities being created and the impact they may have on the mission nature of community-based hospitals like Bloomington Hospital.
I understand more now from what you've said that we are a microcosm of the macrocosm in many respects. Well, let's take another break and tell us what you have in store for us this time, Mark.
Well, I've gone away from a musical to an artist that I've always enjoyed listening to, Frank Sinatra. And I think we're going to play The Way You Look Tonight.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight. Yes, you're lovely with your smile so warm and your cheeks so.
Well, that certainly is a wonderful song. As we've been talking and we've touched on just a few of the challenges in healthcare, both nationally and in our own community, the complexity of it strikes me as being almost overwhelming. How can you, as the CEO, working with, I suppose, your senior leadership, how can you prepare for the future? How can you keep up with all of the changes and all of the challenges? How do you plan?
It's always a challenge, I think, for any organization, particularly in today's world where there's an overload of information, to be able to sift out the information that's meaningful, that adds value to your decision-making process. But we have some highly trained, highly educated, and skilled folks in our organization that through different resources, internet publications, journals, conversing with their peers across the country, attendance at national meetings, and then through our various associations. The Indiana Hospital Association, for instance, has a lot of expertise and is linked into the American Hospital Association, of which we're members of both, to provide us with the cutting-edge information that's going on in the field as well as what's happening legislatively. We also are part of a large national organization called the Voluntary Hospitals of America, and this is a collection of community-based systems throughout the United States who have come together over the last 25 to 30 years, initially just to pool their resources around group purchasing, but that quickly led into the sharing of best practice and a variety of other ways that the synergy of 1,200 hospitals nationwide could lend. And so, again, the right kind of information and the right kind of best practice around any given program is accessible to Bloomington Hospital and to us through these different organizations. In terms of how we strategically plan, when I first started with Bloomington Hospital, we were right in that midst, in that hiatus of needing to update our strategic plan. So we took a very planned approach toward, number one, getting as much feedback and input from a variety of sources as we could. And we probably met with some 14 to 20 different groups in forums and in going to different folks and saying, what are the strengths that we have that you want to see us continue? What are some of the weaknesses or areas you think we need to improve? And then are there gaps in service to this community we should address. So we garnished a lot of different feedback from the community at large and from selected organizations through that process. We then, you know, looked at the demographics of who we served and tried to do the same type of analysis and ended up with around 30 different strategic goals, all based off of a mission statement that does exemplify the quality healthcare service we want to render to the South Central region, but then also a vision statement of saying, as a regional referral center, we wanted to be the provider of choice. We wanted folks in this greater community, when they truly have an illness, no matter how acute, to think of us and our physicians first and not feel like they have to go to Indianapolis or Louisville to get outstanding care because they don't.
Now, is there anything at all that you don't provide that people would have to go to Louisville or Indianapolis for?
Yes, there's a small handful of things. Probably the most notable is Riley Hospital, that for most institutions in the state of Indiana, the ability to access that highest level, sometimes it's called quaternary care, the very highest level of care around pediatrics, newborns, et cetera, is not available. And it's not cost effective for us to try to duplicate that type of service. So we have one of the outstanding children's hospitals in the United States in Riley. And so that's a perfect example of where patients in need of the kind of care and the level of care that Riley gives will be transported to Indianapolis. Another area, again, not very frequent, but it would not be cost effective for us to render this care, is transplantation, organ transplants.
Oh, I see.
So patients in need of an organ transplant, again, would travel to centers that can amass enough volume to be proficient at that, and we don't do that. Those are probably the two biggest examples. Probably a third example is we are a level 2 trauma center. And a level 1 trauma center would be, again, the most acute. And even though we see some 50,000 visits in our emergency department, again, the amount of highest level of acuity of trauma care is such that we will occasionally transfer those cases again to Indianapolis in most cases, and often by helicopter. But it's rare.
Well, we certainly are lucky that there are so many services available right here at home. I am struck at times when I listen to you talk about the importance of the basic values that undergird everything that you do at Bloomington Hospital. Could you tell me a little more about what are the basic values, or what are the pillars that support the programs that you provide?
We established, I'll tell you that from a hospital first of all, and then I'll give you some insight into myself too. But from the hospital, our values, the acronym is TEAM. And we love the way that comes together, because everything we do revolves around teamwork. But the TEAM stands for trust, excellence, accountability, and mutual respect. And one of the things that I've loved about our values, because often an institution or organization will create values and value statements, and they're just words on paper. But in our case, we've taken each one of those values and we've translated them into behaviors, into saying, here as a staff member of Bloomington Hospital is how you should see your team leader or the person you report to exhibiting the values. And then here are some of the attributes and behaviors we would expect of you around trust, for instance, or excellence, et cetera. And then we've had those values be discussed, dialogued, in some cases debated, I suppose, in each of our department settings. And we do that periodically and on an ongoing fashion. So we truly try to live the values. You know, institutions are just like people. You're not perfect. You're not always going to be able to do the best job you can. But if you recognize where you need improvement, you're open and honest about the dialogue of that, and you try to spread that throughout the 3,400 people that work at Bloomington Hospital in our whole system, you will be successful. I've often said to folks, particularly new folks, imagine the power of 3,400 people all working toward a common goal and all living those values. it would be tremendous. Most organizations fail at that, but we're doing our best to strive toward that.
And I think you have had some very interesting quality control endeavors that have resulted in great improvements, and also, I think, in terms of benchmarks nationally, the behaviors exhibited at this hospital seem to be very impressive.
I would agree, Moya. I mean, there's always more and more that we can do, and we're striving continuously toward that. But one of the things that's also coming to healthcare fairly rapidly is a transparency of outcomes, that whatever the particular diagnosis or area of a hospital where we collect data and we compare our performance to regional and national standards, increasingly that's going to be public. This last year, the federal government, through the Medicare program, started that process by announcing that three different diagnoses compared to certain national standards, the outcomes of in Bloomington Hospital compared to every other hospital in the United States would be public on their website. And that's indeed occurred around pneumonia, heart failure, and acute myocardial infarction or heart attack. So you can get on the Centers for Medicare Medicaid website and see the experience of hospitals around the country. That will only continue. So that has led us into much more of a systematic form of analysis of our performance, comparing ourselves to best practice and standard, and then mobilizing teams of hospital staff and physicians around each of those diagnoses to make sure our outcomes are the best they possibly can be.
That's very comforting for those of us who are potential patients of Bloomington Hospital. And I know that when I have had friends or relatives that have been in the hospital, I've always been very impressed by the very humane demeanor of all of the staff and physicians and nurses. And I think that is something that everyone feels comforted by at a time when a family member is ill, the fact that there is a caring attitude amongst the staff. And I think that it's interesting to me to see that this has been approached very systematically, that you value trust and caring and are continually trying to improve your performance and that of your staff.
We've also tried to sharpen that in terms of what we would call patient satisfaction, and have actually taken all of our staff through customer loyalty training. And you that might sound a little funny, because some people would say, well, you don't have to tell me how to be nice. But it really has to do with the sharpness and the standardization and the consistency of how folks answer the phone, how they respond to folks, how they respect privacy. I mean, in just a variety of different ways that our staff can consistently exceed the expectations of our patients and our families.
Well, that's interesting, and it is very reassuring to know that this work is going on at Bloomington Hospital, because we're all the beneficiaries, all of us in this region. So you've told us about a lot of the different aspects of your job and the things that keep you excited about what you're doing and so energetic. How would you describe your leadership style?
One of the things that I learned from my parents and also from one of my principal mentors in the field was the value of interpersonal skills, that people, when they fail out there in the world, don't usually do it because of the lack of technical skills. They do it because of the lack of interpersonal skills, their inability to get along with folks or work in a team setting or value the roles of different individuals, no matter what they do. Then the thing I love about hospitals is the interdependency. Every job is important, and everybody's role and worth to our organization is important. So I guess you might say these lessons about the worth of individuals, the joy of working with folks in a team setting, and the value of interpersonal skills, listening as well as being able to lead, are all kind of ingrained in me from the observations of people who were masters at that, whether it be, like I said, my parents or some of my early mentors and the folks I worked for at Community Hospital in Indianapolis. And subsequently, I just in the last 3 years, I've learned so much from folks here at Bloomington around those same dimensions. But my management style, I guess, is the underpinning are those things I've talked about, but also a very open style. I guess the older I get, the more I realize what I don't know and value the expertise of other people. And so I try to learn as much as I can, empower folks to make decisions, and then have us work as a team.
Well, it seems to be working. And we seem to be very fortunate that we've had the past 100 years of quality health care and that we have the future to look forward to with the kind of attitude that you have and that your senior leadership have. Given a perfect environment, Mark, what is the one aspect of healthcare that you would like to see changed?
Moya, let me comment on that first of all from a national perspective and then possibly local. And they're both very tied together, obviously. But I think from a national perspective, and if you'd asked me this at the early part of my career, I might have had a different answer. But more and more I've seen the fact that we are stratifying healthcare in the United States in the different levels on the basis of whether a person has insurance or not. And so I do believe that we should be able to come up with some kind of a system that provides a basic level of health care for all citizens of the United States, no matter what walk of life or whatever their means are. And then above and beyond that basic level, it could be like any other retail form that your discretionary income or your ability to get more advanced insurance or whatever would play a part. But then in that system, I would also like to see different incentives built in, incentives for people to somehow take some increased responsibility for their own health care and for their own prevention and wellness aspects of their life, because so much of the ailments that affect us as a society come about through those that are self-induced, through smoking, through obesity, I mean, issues that are behavioral-oriented. Asthma, et cetera. And these are all health conditions that can be vastly improved just by behaviors. So some system that builds in incentives for folks to be able to take more responsibility and self-manage their care, but still provides a base level of benefits to individuals. I know that's dreaming, but for me, that would be ideal for our country. Because there is no question that our country has so much advanced medicine and such a plentiful supply of technology and expertise, but yet it is embarrassing that our healthcare outcomes compared to many countries in the United States are lower. On a local level, because I also believe that so much of healthcare plays out in a local way, I think ideally for all of the assets in this community, including the provider structure, to come together to better address how we can improve access to health care, whether it be through our indigent care clinics, through our physician practices, through the other social service agencies, ideally to have our community truly be a showcase of what could happen in the United States around the different pieces and parts and asset base of our community working together would be ideal. In many ways, that's already starting to occur or has occurred. And we have a community that does have a history of dialoguing actively and in many cases working together, but it could be improved. So our own vision statement of integration into this community and trying to better address some of these issues of health that in our community and the state of Indiana are not good. Unfortunately, Indiana is not a healthy state compared to the rest of the population in the United States. We tend to rank up there in the top 5 or 6 in terms of smoking rates, obesity rates, asthma, I mean, some of the diabetes, some of the things I'm talking about. So we need to do a better job. And Bloomington Hospital is more than willing to continue to take on that responsibility and help lead that charge.
Well, that's a good note to end on. But before we end, let's have another music selection. What do you have for us this time?
Well, just one more from Frank Sinatra. Good old Frank, and it's going to be That's Life. Sounds like a good way to end.
It certainly does. And that brings us to the conclusion. Our guest was Mark Moore, President and CEO of Bloomington Hospital. Mark, thank you for spending time with us today and sharing your thoughts with our WFIU audience. I'm Moya Andrews, and thanks for listening.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June. I said that's life. And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it.
The program you just heard was recorded in the studios of WFIU in June of 2005. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. The recording engineer and technical producer was Michael Paskash. Emily Blacklin, research assistant. Copies of this or other programs can be obtained by calling 812-855-1357. In addition, this and other Profiles programs can be accessed through our website at wfiu.indiana.edu. For WFIU, thanks for listening.